Oliver, it is excellent to have you back.
Indeed it is.
It's lovely to be here again. I'm sorry I've been so absent for such a long time. It feels like I've been away since the new year, but I know I've been here in between. How have you all been without me? How's it been?
It's the tabletop game world. Things are good, things are bad, things are up and down.
Like the rest of the world, really, then?
Exactly. If you are listening to us for the first time, hi there, I'm Jamie Adams.
And I'm Ian McAllister.
And I'm Oliver Kinner. And this is Brainwaves episode 138, bringing you the best in tabletop gaming news. These are the headlines for the week of the 4th of March 2024. Asdor Award announces winners. Carport Edison Award reveals finalists. And Prospera Hall employees kick up a storm. All this and more on this episode of Brainwaves.
Yes, award season is in full swing once more, and the Asdor, which is the kind of French equivalent of the Spiel des Jahres Award, or the Golden Ace Award, has just announced its winners. Every year, this award's given out at the Festival of Games in Cannes. Now, the award is split into four categories: an overall game of the year that is aimed towards lighter games, a children's game, which are games aimed towards 3 to 7 year olds, an intermediate game, which refers to games played by a regular audience seeking more challenging mechanisms, as the award puts it, and an expert game, which is complex games with sophisticated mechanisms. The winners this year were Trio for Game of the Year, that was designed by Keo Miano and published by Asmodee; Puzzle Adventure for Children's, designed by Antonin Bacara and Romantic Galanier, published by Blackrock Games; Far Away for Intermediate Game, designed by Johanna Scoopy and Corenta Labrat, published by Blackrock Games as well; and La Familia for the Expert Game, which has been designed by Maximilia Maria Thiel and published by Neoludus. Congratulations to all the winners.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, and now looking into the Asdor this year, I hadn't realised how close it was to the Spiel des Jahres. It is sort of aimed towards that lighter fare, and as we've covered before in the cast, the Spiel des Jahres isn't, like, it's not the Game of the Year award of all games. It is aimed towards getting more people into gaming, and it has that lens to sort of lighter, more introductory fare. So I hadn't realized how close these two awards actually are in terms of, like, their audience and target, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's nice to hear. It's nice that there's another award in Europe that does something similar, trying to attract more people to the hobby and giving everyone sort of a choice, like, you know, the expert game, which is what we'd probably think of, like, the really, really heavy games. Now, they're more complex games with sophisticated mechanisms, and that's above the intermediate games, which is games played by a regular audience seeking more challenging mechanisms. So again, those two categories just show you this is not for the heavy gamers, the, you know, one who has read a 20-page rule book. This is for anyone who doesn't really know much about board games and just wants something that fits their level or wants something more challenging. It's great to see.
Even thinking about it from a financial point of view, I mean, the people who, like, for example, the small minority of the population of the board gaming space, the tabletop gaming space, who use Board Game Geek, that is, yes, that can be quite vocal, but at the end of the day, they're not going to be the ones that are going to be bringing in as much money as people who are people with families, people who are getting into board games, trying something lighter, because you've got to sink a lot of time and money to sit down for like a 3-hour, 20-page rulebook game. But a lot of these games, yeah, fantastic. They're not the ones that everyone knows. Yeah, they're a little bit different. Oh, that's interesting. Interesting theming, interesting mechanics. Let's do that. And it's lovely to see a much, for want of a better phrase, lighter a set of games being more in the public eye, because that's how you get people. Also, this is award season, so why am I doing this?
Well, because you're doing the next one.
Oh, that's okay then. Oh yeah, I am. It's the Cardboard Edison Awards, one of our favorite awards. Cardboard Edison Awards seek out unsigned designs and highlight them to the wider community. Now, the finalists have been announced, and they are Caminito by designer Pedro Ometo, Cartonage by Loic Lamy, Chroma by David Walsh, Comic Book Boom by Dan Nichols, Crime Scene Party by Leo Taylor, Crowded Frontier by Miles Wallace, NMR by James Mapes, Kells by Anne Mayer, Lily Hop by Matthew Hawker, Single Sort by Corey Andalora and Donnie Coleman, Snowy Peaks by Yuri Maroni and Gabriel Toshi, Soothsayers by Jeff Griesenthwaite, Starlight Diner by Jay Bucciarelli and Liberty Kiefer, and Tokamak by Alexander Simon Triso. You can check out more about each of these finalists on the Cardboard Edison Award page we will link to in the show notes. And I would highly recommend it because it is a wonderful set of designs and themings and settings that you might not normally see in board gaming. The finalists will have to send a prototype to the award committee by the 11th of April, and the winners will be announced in May. We spoke to the winner of last year's competition, Sabrina Sulba, back in cast episode 123. Sabrina's game Die Atoms was kickstarted successfully. I believe, Oliver, you played a review copy of it recently.
I did. It's a lovely game. It's, what is it? It's a place different coloured and different shaped pieces on a board to make patterns and score points, which sounds rather boring. But if you like the sort of puzzly games, this is right up your street. And it's more about the setting, you know, the diatoms, I call them diatoms. I don't know what the actual pronunciation is.
I believe it's diatoms.
Diatoms.
Pronunciation.
Yeah. It's just that the setting, it's the theme behind it that's so different and so interesting. And I must say, this year, I haven't actually followed the Cardboard Edison Awards. Normally, I do look at what's going on and sort of look at what's out there, but I haven't done so far. So now that the finals have been announced, I'll have to have a closer look and see what's available. Because, as you said, there's always something different, something you wouldn't expect normally from the hobby. And usually, there's at least one title that then goes further, either being self-published or being picked up by a publisher. And yeah, it's just great. So yeah, if you don't know anything about the Cardboard Edison Award, do take a look. And if you're a budding designer, you know, maybe next year you can take part.
Yep. Okay, very quickly, looking through the list of nominations and what they're about, let's have a look. Lily Hop is about frogs navigating circles of lily pads. Kells is about a game of medieval Celtic manuscript illumination. NMR is naked mole rats competing to tunnel to the surface and bring back tubers.
Awesome.
Yes, like and Comic Book Boom is about the 90s comic book boom. So, you know.
Cool. There you go.
Come on, awesome. How many awards can you say? We've got, you know, naked mole rats, the Celtic manuscript illumination, and the 90s.
Naked mole rat is your spirit animal.
How dare you? I'm a ferret. Hey, a fantastic award. Doing great work. We'll always shout out the Cardboard Edison Awards. So sit tight, keep an eye out, have a look at it if you're interested. There'll be some great stuff there. Now, I think it's we're moving away from awards now.
Yeah, we're moving away from awards and we're moving towards, yeah, I suppose some good news. So a couple of episodes back in Cast 136, we covered the sad demise of games design studio Prospero Hall. The owner of the studio, Funko, sold it to German games and toy company Goliath, shedding most of the staff that made Prospero Hall such an icon in recent years. Prospero Hall had bucked the trend of bad movie tie-in games with titles like Jaws and Top Gun, and had a huge success with a line of Disney villainous games. Game development lead at Prospero Hall, Chris Rowlands, posted to their LinkedIn profile recently that they were launching a new studio called Tempest Workshop. From that post,
"Our previous team was the best in the world at what we did, and many of our former colleagues have moved on to other positions in the industry or are pursuing their own projects. This means that Tempest Workshop is by no stretch the entirety of what our team once was, but I have complete faith in the folks we're assembling to bring beautiful and amazing experiences to every table. Trust me, we'll prove it to you. We love making games. We believe they can change the world. We sincerely do. It is an absolute honor and privilege to be able to make amazing products alongside this team. The best is yet to come."
The studio's offering services such as game design, development and testing, as well as production and project management. There's an email in the post we will link to that will allow you to get in touch should you be interested in engaging this new venture. Now, Prospero Hall, as far as I know, were always listed as in Board Game Geek as just Prospero Hall as a designer. There was never individual names listed.
That's right, yeah.
Now, I've heard that people, designers, have actually now gone in and actually added their names to those games on Board Game Geek. Yes. So that's also interesting to see. And yeah, so keep an eye on those games. Maybe you pick up some designers that you didn't realize were behind it. And certainly look at Tempest Workshop. So yeah, good news came out of bad news. It's nice to see that at least some of the team are still about and doing, trying to do, yeah, be in the industry and do good.
Yeah, as we mentioned at the time, it seemed incredibly short-sighted to us that Goliath bought Prospero Hall, but didn't take the talent with them that made Prospero Hall Prospero Hall. Yeah. I mean, I guess they were just after the IPs. There was something in that deal where Goliath was getting to publish the Villainous games, especially in different countries, Germany included, I think, sort of across Europe. So obviously there's some sort of IP rights thing going on there as well. But to not take that talent with you seems just, bizarre.
It doesn't sound like they're actually trying to develop new games.
No.
They're literally just buying the IPs and, doing something else with it. So,
If you're not in the space and you see that name Prospero Hall and you're going, oh, I played Jaws and I played Top Gun and I played Villainous and, I really like these. And is someone else or other people going to take up the Prospero Hall name? And then there might end up being, again, this is all hypothetical, but there could be a battle for the trademark because bringing disrepute to the name of Prospero Hall.
Yeah, I mean, if I remember correctly, I don't think Prospero Hall really appeared on the projects much. It was a sort of like a sort of sub-studio of a bunch of companies at the time. So like, I think like Jaws was through like Ravensburger, as was Top Gun. The design studio that did it was Prospero Hall.
But that's the thing, it's like if they've got the name Prospero Hall,
yeah.
But does this mean that Goliath is going to start designing games under the name Prospero Hall? So that's my...
I see what you mean. Maybe.
We'll see. Anyway, on to the rest of the news.
Now, over the last few years, the games industry has suffered from regular disruptions to the way products are moved around the globe. From enormous price rises during the peak of the pandemic to ships getting stuck in the Suez Canal, it seemed that everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Many companies suffered when these incidents hit their profits, and we saw several go under during the fallout. Now, a new problem is bringing back memories of those bad old days. Attacks on vessels in the Red Sea from Yemen's Houthi rebels have led to a massive increase in global shipping costs and a new threat to the health of the board game industry. In a piece on site Board Game Wire, Tory Gardner, freight manager for crowdfunding fulfillment service GameFound, which is based in the UK, said...
Before going into how difficult this has been for us, it must be said how terrible this entire situation is as a whole. We hope they can come to a resolution soon. We started seeing knock-on effects in early December. At that time, it appeared as though the main issue would be longer timelines. For example, prior to this, my China to UK shipment was sailing on average around 4 weeks. As the situation developed, it quickly extended to at least 5, with a full possibility of it ending up closer to 6 weeks. Muttering about pricing changes started happening mid to late December. As the year came to an end, it became apparent that we were in for a rude awakening. By the time we came back from the festive break, the entire process had shifted. As you noted, prices absolutely shot up and became completely unrecognizable to the previous prices quoted at the end of 2023. In addition, quote validity timelines had also reduced from a month to a week, and eventually extending to a 2-week period. Collecting quotes, confirming bookings, and finding sailings within the price validity period has felt like an impossible task. Overall processes have been taking longer and costing significantly more. With this aside, I do hold out hope that the year will improve.
Now, reports from the US indicate that they are yet to see a major impact from these problems, but that is coming. Noted in an article on Board Game Wire is that the Red Sea is not the only issue hitting global shipping. Water levels in the Panama Canal have been at record lows, making it difficult to get ships through the locks there. All this has coincided with Chinese New Year, a period of time when many Chinese companies shut down. Savvy board game companies always take this into account when planning Kickstarters and publications, but cannot predict the other events that have befallen them. Now, this, along with many other instances we have covered on this cast, really goes to show how incredibly complex and nuanced global shipping can be. A small problem on one side of the globe can massively affect your prices and retail on the other side of the globe. If you are going to run a Kickstarter and ship globally, be prepared for some real headaches. If you're manufacturing in China and shipping worldwide, things get incredibly, incredibly complicated.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of Kickstarters announce that there can't or guaranteed delivery times now that, you know, the plans are sort of out the window. As you said, they have planned for Chinese New Year. I mean, a lot of Kickstarters always say, oh, we'll get it done before Chinese New Year, and it never happens. But now that on top of it, and then the pricing as well. I've seen more and more Kickstarters now that almost didn't give you a shipping price and almost just say, it'll be roughly this, but we have no idea.
Yeah.
We have to sort of tell you close to the time. And that's the sort of uncertainties that are just standard now. And it doesn't just affect board games, it affects anything that gets shipped across the world.
was going to say, I was going to add, yeah, there, Oliver, I was going, yes, you know, we are looking at this from a tabletop focus, but this is global.
Yeah, yeah, it affects everything. Like,
yeah. Like, actually have a look at things that you have around the house or wherever you are and go, how much does it say, for example, made in China?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's a massive problem for everyone.
And as we're looking at it from the sort of commercial side, obviously there's a human side to it. I mean, people working in the shipping industry are probably badly paid and the working conditions are awful. Now, imagine you're now also sailing through basically a waterway that is at risk of being attacked, you know, I mean, violently attacked. We're not talking about,
yeah,
even when we had this situation where ships were attacked by pirates and boarded and things, we're now talking about missiles being fired at these ships. It's just absolutely big tragedy happening here that, you know, needs to be addressed somehow. And obviously, as we heard, it all then links back to other political things happening in the world. But yeah, so big issue. And to just keep in mind, maybe getting games that are produced more locally isn't a bad idea after all.
Secondhand games. My goodness, secondhand games. Or it could be a good idea to try some old games. Maybe listening to something like Cult of the Old, the podcast that's co-hosted by Ian McAllister. I think this is the second or third time I've actually managed to plug this per episode.
I think you have plugged my other cast on this show more than I have.
But I'm going to stop doing it. Cut that. Just cut everything about I just said about.
All I'm going to do is clip it and I'm just going to repeat it in each cast.
That's fine. I'll plug it as well. So if you're looking for some advice on older games, Cult of the Old is an amazing podcast. I wish there were more.
What isn't? It's rubbish. It's rubbish. What you should really do is listen to Tabletop Games Blog.
Season 2 are now 2 episodes in. Episode 3 will surprise you.
Oh, shut up with your clickbait.
Anyway, there's some rascally goings on in the world of tabletop RPGs, Jamie.
There always is. As regular listeners will recall, at the beginning of 2023, there was something of a controversy over Wizards of the Coast walking back the open gaming license. Now, this was what allowed people to produce D&D-related products without having to seek specific arrangements with Wizards of the Coast, who owned the D&D license. The person who broke that story was Lynn Cadega, who had had a brilliant year reporting on all aspects of the RPG gaming space. Now, at the end of last year, Lynn's employers were stupid enough to sack them. But now Lynn, Chase Carter, and Rowan Zioli have formed a new RPG-focused news site called Rascal. Their launch announcement says,
Rascal is a tabletop role-playing game and culture outlet striving to sustainably publish voicey journalism that is compelling, deeply reported, and fearlessly honest. We're also a little cheeky. Our tagline, alternative, independent, roguelike, embodies the kind of work we'll be doing and our ethos. We're not the only option, we're an alternative. We are fully worker-owned and entirely independent, not controlled by anyone but ourselves, with zero strings attached to VCs, advertisers, or investors. Roguelike pays homage to Rogue, the first text-based game that utilized a computer to randomly generate dungeons. We aim to put up new work every day to be slightly unpredictable and do things a little differently.
And the site has been uploading content on a daily basis. This includes interviews, editorials, and looking at products from across the tabletop RPG space. Now, while you can get a sample of the work for free, reading a lot of articles on the site will require a monthly or yearly subscription. And we, from all of us at Brainwaves and the Giant Brain, wish them the very best of luck for the future. This is not Absolutely. A competitive thing. This yeah. is comrades in covering this space.
Yeah. And especially Lynn. It's just so nice to see that Lynn's found something and they're
yeah.
using their amazing talent to do more work in on the same line. So yeah, great to see. And obviously the others as well. I don't want to take away from Chase and Rowan as well.
Yeah, I don't know Rowan very well, but Chase have followed for a while and their work on Dicebreaker has been really good.
If you listen
really
to this,
good.
Chase, Ian is following you.
Yeah, not like that, not in a creepy way. But yeah, it's really good to see another sort of RPG reporting space because, I mean, I've been at this kind of thing for a long time where like the RPG criticism isn't very good. It's not great, like the RPG criticism space and like how we look at RPGs. So it's lovely to see a sort of RPG focused site with some really good writers come out. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what they produce. I'll probably be subscribing myself to read some of their work because I really admire all of them.
Yeah, and I think that it's again highlights what happens with tabletop journalism generally at the moment. I think, you know, just the story originally.
Online journalism in general. Isn't bad.
Journalism in general.
So. Yeah, because like big places like Vice have just collapsed, and there's a lot of like stories going around about executives like lining their own pockets and then firing the people that make those sites great and what they were.
And producing AI stories as well and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Gizmodo did that.
I fired Lynn. I have no strong political opinion on this because I don't want to do what I did last week and get grumpy again. Well, not grumpy, table thumpy.
Let's move on to a few jobs, opportunities, and events.
If you're looking for a role in the tabletop space, always check out the Facebook Tabletop Jobs group. I've actually started looking at that myself a lot more. There are jobs, I think a lot of them are US-based, but there are quite a few European ones, UK ones, marketing roles, project managers, all sorts of stuff. Really interesting. So follow that. In fact, I think the Facebook group is also sort of feeds back into a website, but there's more information on there, facebook.com/group/tabletopjobs. Now for something really positive, we have Role Play for Ukraine. It's coming in May this year. The Role Play for Ukraine event running from the 3rd to the 5th of May. It's an online event raising money for medical supplies to Ukraine. You can find out more on the Discord organized for the event and participate in a wide range of role-playing games to raise money for this very worthy cause. Again, obviously links in the show notes. We also want to talk about the Diana Jones Emerging Artist Award. So the Diana Jones Award is an annual award for excellence in gaming. Since 2021, it has expanded with an Emerging Designer Award as well. So they've recently announced that the 2024 Emerging Designer Award is open for submissions. From that press release,
the Emerging Designer Program provides both access and support to those designers that have historically been excluded from the larger industry conversations. While we recognize this program is only a first step in that process, our organization is committed to pushing forward, learning from mistakes, and improving the industry we love. Designers who are selected as finalists receive a free badge and hotel room at Gen Con, up to $2,000 travel reimbursement for both domestic and international travel, a $75 per day food stipend, a $2,000 honorarium for presenting their work, and a prize package of game design resources. They're also showcased as a Diana Jones Award Emerging Designer at Gen Con.
The deadline for submission is the 2nd of April, so you've got about a month, and you can find all the details at the link that we'll put in the show notes. Again, Diana Jones Award, very worthy award. Always keep an eye out for that as well, whether you want to sign up as a designer or just interested in the designs that come out of there. It's definitely worth looking at.
I think always important for the Diana Jones Award as well is most of the awards usually focus on games, but the Diana Jones Award will focus on maybe movements or a designer or a series of designers.
Or they've awarded to conventions in the past.
Exactly.
Well.
So it's not just gaming. It's the whole business and industry of gaming itself. The culture, thank you.
Yeah.
Also, I know it's not, but it says, you know, you said there, Oliver, designers receive a free badge. And I was like, I know it's like a probably like a pass for Gen Con, but just in my mind, just sort of a tiny pin badge.
Like a Blue Peter badge.
Like a Blue Peter badge. Like, you won't. You will get something. Just list it. If you want to apply for this, you'll probably get, you know, a pass to Gen Con. Not just a little, like, Blue Peter badge. I took part, and all I got was this lousy badge.
And if you're an international listener who doesn't know what Blue Peter badge is, Google it. Anyway, we'd like to just take a moment to give a shout out to our patrons who support our cast financially. Our fees are coming up for our WordPress hosting, and your help really, really helps us make sure the cast and the site can keep going. A special thanks to our executive producers, Kevin Bertram from Fort Circle Games, James Naylor from Naylor Games, and Sean Newman from the Gamelot team. You can find links to all the things they get up to in our show notes. You can join them on our Patreon for just $1 a month. That really helps us out if you can throw us a buck or two. You can also sign up for free on the Patreon, and you'll find some writing there that I don't put up on the main site. I do a roundup of all the criticism I've been enjoying across the last month or so. We do a forward thinking for our patrons to show what's coming up in the forthcoming month. And I also do a quick overview of all the games I've been playing in the last month or so, with a few sort of like quick impressions and that kind of thing. Some of those will get to full reviews, some of them won't. But you can sign up for free to get notified of that content if you'd like. There are various other ways to support us on the site. Just go to the links in the show notes and you'll find out all about those.
Look, I'll be honest, there's not really any interesting news. I was going to talk to you about the announcement from Modiphius that there's going to be a new Discworld TTRPG, but we haven't, but that's not really interesting. So I think, Ian, you are actually going to be away and representing us, I was going to say internationally, well, one of them internationally. You're representing us at several conventions.
I was going to say, this is much more interesting what Ian's getting up to in the next few months, weeks.
Let's be a little bit self-indulgent.
Yeah, absolutely. I will be at Aircon in Harrogate in England from the 14th to 17th of March. I am down there as press, but basically I'll just be playing a bunch of games, hoping to see a bunch of people and catch up.
And, I'm so jealous.
It's mostly just a play-focused con, so I'm just looking forward to playing a load of games. I had a blast last year, and I'm really looking forward to attending again. And I'm going to be a guest at GothCon in Sweden. That's in Gothenburg in Sweden, from the 29th to 31st of March. It's mostly an RPG-focused con, but there's other games there as well. I'm really looking forward to it. I was hoping to get across last year. They invited me last year, but due to some family emergencies, I couldn't get across. So they were good enough to invite me back this year. I'm currently booked to do a panel about reviewing RPGs with a few of the Swedish RPG crowd. And I'm also going to be running Blades in the Dark for some people in front of an audience and live on mic.
Wow.
Which is going to be a couple of firsts for me. Both of those will go out as podcasts, which you'll in the Brainwaves feed post-con, all going well. As far as I'm aware, that's going to be recorded and we're all going to be able to put out on our various channels. So yeah, look out for those coming out, and I'll hope to see some of you at those conventions.
Well, it's nice to know, Ian, that, you know, one of us is getting invited to go to other countries. And I mean, to be fair, one of us is actually writing articles and, you know, actually taking an active role in the medium, and one of us just talks absolute bilge into a microphone for a half an hour to an hour every 2 weeks because they've got no real idea what to write about. And it does, saying this now, it makes absolute sense.
Well, you know, you're always welcome to write for the site, Jamie.
I wrote something once, twice. I've written two things. One thing I wrote was my write-up of the mega game that I did at UK Games Expo about five years ago now. And the other one was at the beginning of 2020, I said I was going to write an article every like 3 or 4 months about cutting down my games collection. And then COVID hit. I still could have done
it. Yeah, still haven't cut down your game collection. I mean, that was the ideal opportunity, surely.
Well, I mean, it should have been. But, I mean, I've cut it down and then some other games have arrived. Anyway, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. If you've made it this far, congratulations. If you like what you've listened to, then the best way to help us out is to share the podcast, drop a review on iTunes or whatever platform you're listening on. You can also follow us on our Discord. Oliver is at the tabletopgamesblog.com. Oliver, you also have a Discord with some fantastic like thought pieces and reviews going up every week. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, the blog is the place to go, and then you'll find the links to Discord and various other places there. So yeah, tabletopgamesblog.com. Thank you very much.
Brilliant, yeah. So we have our Giant Brain Discord where we're mostly chatting nonsense on there, but it's a good way. We are also on Blue Sky. Ian and I are on Blue Sky. So if you search the Giant Brain, or I think I'm just Jamie Adams on Blue Sky, then you'll find us there. You're also on there, Oliver, as Tabletop Games Blog, of course.
Yep.
This is all, you know, very simple. Yeah, just Jamie Adams. We're on Instagram at Giant Brain UK. We're on Facebook at The Giant Brain. Our website, which hosts all of Ian's articles and this podcast, giantbrain.co.uk. And if you want to send us any thoughts, queries, feedback, ramblings about the state of the industry as you see it, giantbrainuk@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Great to have you back, Oliver. Take care.
Thank you. We'll see you soon. It was a pleasure. Speak to you soon, all.
Always a joy. Bye.
See you soon, folks.